Good morning. My name is Tate Westendorf with the Virginia Beach Public Defender's Office here on behalf of Mr. Clemente. The sole issue...
Before you get there, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Thank you for reminding me, Your Honor. I would. Thank you.
How much time?
If I could have 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Yes, sir.
Thank you. The sole issue on this appeal is whether the California DUI law is substantially similar to Virginia's law. Mr. Clemente was convicted of a DUI fourth or subsequent offense. There were 5 prior convictions that were submitted to the trial court. One of those was a Virginia Beach conviction that's not being challenged.
Are you familiar with our decision, unpublished decision in Taylor versus Commonwealth, finding that there's a substantial similarity between the California DUI statute and Virginia's, even though it's unpublished and therefore not binding? We have this interpanel accord doctrine, so it's difficult, let me say, for us to go against that. How do we get around that?
Your Honor, I think that the issue in that case, Taylor, was a more narrow issue, and that had dealt with the presumption, the rebuttable presumption at a .08 or above, which we're not challenging today. So I think that the issue before the court today is a broader one. And what we're challenging specifically, the standard is well established when you're talking about a substantial similarity analysis, which is if there are circumstances which would permit conviction in the other state that would not permit conviction in Virginia, then the two statutes are not substantially similar. And we would be relying on 2 situations which we identified in the brief. One, that in California, mopeds that are being operated on private property are subject to their DUI law, whereas in the Virginia Code section, mopeds being operated on private property are specifically excluded. Mopeds must be operated on a public highway in Virginia to fall under the Virginia DUI law. And the second circumstance would be the operation of electric personal mobility devices. And again, the Virginia DUI statute specifically excludes those from the ambit of the statute, whereas the California law is a broader one. It prohibits driving while impaired a vehicle, not just a motor vehicle, but a vehicle. And our position would be that would include personal mobility devices.
Well, in the substantial similarity test, given that neither mopeds nor electric wheelchairs are involved in this case, why should we even look to those?
Well, we're looking at the prior offenses, of course, and I know that the Commonwealth had argued in their brief that those are essentially moot arguments because there was some evidence, at least with respect to 2 of the prior California convictions, that he was driving a vehicle.
An automobile, right.
Now, my position would be, and they had cited 3 different cases in support of that argument, and that was Dilsworth, Cox, and Honaker. And I think that it's useful to go back and to look at the facts of those cases. Honaker had dealt with the West Virginia DUI law. And in that case, the appellant, had specifically pled guilty to driving a motor vehicle while impaired by alcohol. And that West Virginia Code section had had 5 subsections, one of those subsections dealing with impairment by alcohol. And this court had said, had held that he pled guilty to driving while impaired to that specific subsection of the statute. So that's the only one that we need to look at for substantial similarity purposes. Dilsworth was a very similar situation in the context of the Maryland malicious wounding statute, where the appellant had pled guilty to a specific provision, subsection of that statute. And so this court had ruled that's the only one that we need look at for a substantial similarity analysis. Cox was a situation where the appellant was found guilty of just a general DUI statute. There was no specific subsection that was listed in the sentencing order, the conviction order. And so this court had ruled we have to look at the entire statute for substantial similarity purposes. And my position is that the facts here are most similar to Cox. Mr. Clemente, all of the California convictions were just the general DUI conviction. There was some extrinsic evidence offered in the trial court through a summons that he may have been driving a car. But my position would be that a reviewing court, has to look at the court orders, not the summons. The summons is not an official court document. It's not signed by a judge. And, of course, it's well established that courts speak through their orders. I'm not aware of any case dealing with a substantial similarity analysis where the court used extrinsic evidence to determine that they could narrow what portion of the statute needed to be examined for substantial similarity purposes. So my position is he was convicted of just the general DUI law, and this court can't engage it. Again, it's well established that reviewing courts can't look at an order and engage in speculation, conjecture, surmise. And our position would be that's what this court would need to do in order to find, as a matter of certainty, that he was driving a car for those prior California DUI convictions. And so therefore, our position is we have to look at the entire California DUI law for substantial similarity purposes. And for the reasons I've already identified, both the issue with the moped on private property and the issue with personal mobility devices, we would submit that there are circumstances where a conviction would be permitted in California, whereas a conviction would not be permitted in Virginia, and that therefore the two laws are not substantially similar.
But counsel, under the definition in Johnson, don't we have to look, there are two things that go into the substantially similar analysis. One is if there's a common, their common core characteristics, and the other is largely alike in substance or essentials. And you're pointing to two fairly minor pieces of a larger picture.
Maybe so, but that being said, I mean, the standard is, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but the substantially similar analysis, it's been well established case after case, if convictions are permitted under the other state's law that wouldn't permit conviction in Virginia, then whether they might seem minor or picayune, it's still a difference. And for substantial similarity purposes, it would render them not substantially similar. I would also point to the language, the most recent case that was cited by the Commonwealth in their brief, Dilsworth, which I had referenced before. Some of the language from that case, the elements of the two offenses rather than the offender's conduct are what we look at in a substantial similarity analysis. And I think that's a key sentence in the Dilsworth case. We don't look at what happened in California. We look at the elements of the offenses in the statutes. And when we look at the elements of the offenses in both California and Virginia, there are differences that render them not substantially similar. And for those reasons, I'd ask that you reverse Mr. Clemente's conviction for DUI, fourth or subsequent offense, and remand it to the trial court for further proceedings consistent with that ruling. Thank you.
Very well, thank you so much. Ms. Kieran? Carolyn?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Kiernan on behalf of the Commonwealth. Although there are some differences between these two sets of laws, the California DUI codes and the Virginia ones are substantially similar. And it's important that only the subset of the California law at question here has to be compared to the Virginia one. It is evident from the face of the record of conviction, which was submitted to the trial court as part of the stipulation. No one objected to what that record of conviction contained. The record of conviction demonstrates that this defendant was driving a car, a gray Honda Accord, in at least two of his California convictions. The court is not required to turn a blind eye to facts that are evident on the face of the record of conviction. This is not a case where someone had to dig up a transcript. This is not a case like Dean, in which the parties were arguing about this common law definition of robbery, and the court had to dig through all the common law to even get to what the elements of a robbery were, and then they determined that the issue would turn on whether or not the defendant in that case had formed the intent to rob before or after he committed these various offenses. Those are delving deeply in the record. They're fact-specific issues. I would argue to the court that that's the kind of conduct the court can't consider.
So to get to the fourth or more convictions, all that the Commonwealth needed were two of the prior California convictions to support that?
Correct, Your Honor, because there was also a conviction from, I believe it was from Warrington, which is a Virginia conviction, which doesn't have these same type of difficulties in it. And the Cox case, I believe that my opposing counsel cited, and we cited in our brief as well, is, I think, particularly instructive on the issue before the court, because in Cox, the court specifically said that the reason for the substantial similarity requirement is that it would expand the intent of the General Assembly beyond what's evident in the statute. If Commonwealth was able to use convictions from other jurisdictions, which would not have resulted in convictions under Virginia law. It would be unfair to use a conviction under the recidivist portion of that, which would not be a conviction here. In this case, we know absolutely that these two convictions, at least two of the four, would have been convictions under Virginia law. We don't have that problem here. We don't have that unfairness. And to construe this statute to say that where we know he was driving a car because he could have hypothetically been in a motorized wheelchair, we can't use these convictions, I would suggest to the court that's an absurd result.
And what about counsel's argument that you look to the four corners of the statutes themselves in determining if they're substantially similar?
Yes, Your Honor. However, to get to the portions of the statute that we're looking at, the court can use the record to inform kind of where we're looking. For example, in the Dilsworth case, that conviction record, and Honaker also, it mentions specifically in what the record of conviction was that this guy had alcohol in the Honaker case, or in Dilsworth, I believe that he was convicted of an assault with intent to maim. The court in those two cases didn't just pull up the two code sections and compare them. They looked at the defendant's record of conviction to inform their analysis of those two code sections. So what we're asking the court to do here is consistent with that approach that has been taken by the court in previous cases. In another unreported case before this court, the court dealt with the moped issue. It was a federal case. It's an unreported case from this court. It's Corey versus Commonwealth. And in that case, the defendant had a previous DUI on the federal system. And the federal system, like California, does not criminalize driving a moped, or does criminalize, rather, driving a moped not on the highway. And in that case, this court specifically noted that there was nothing in the record to say that guy wasn't driving a moped. And so, therefore, they had to look at the whole code section and they had to go with it. It's not the facts that we have here. We have information evident on the face of the record this guy was driving a car. And under those circumstances, those two convictions were appropriately relied upon by the trial court. It doesn't matter whether the defendant was hypothetically could have been in a motor scooter or on a wheelchair. And the fact of the matter is he wasn't. And it would be absurd to have the court turn a blind eye under these circumstances to that information. Does the court have any questions for me?
I do not.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I'd ask you to affirm.
Thank you very much. Any rebuttal, sir?
Just briefly, Your Honor.
Yes.
What I think distinguishes the facts in this case from Honaker and Dilsworth is, in Honaker and Dilsworth, this court wasn't looking at the facts of those cases. It was looking at specifically what the person was convicted of. And in both those situations, the appellant had been convicted under specific subsections of statutes. And so that's what this court did. It did review the two statutes. It didn't consider the facts of the case. It just considered the specific subsection that the appellant had been convicted of. Here, the appellant was not convicted of any specific subsection, such as driving a motor vehicle. It was just the generalized California DUI law. And so under those circumstances, I would repeat my position that you do just compare the statutes within the four corners of the statutes, as you said, Your Honor. Hopefully this isn't too ham-handed of an analogy. I'm coming up with it on the spot, but a code section that I'm very familiar with because I see it all the time in my line of work is the assault and battery statute, the 18.257. That has three subsections. There's A, the generalized assault and battery, which is a class 1 misdemeanor. There's subsection B, which deals with assault and battery where the assault was motivated by racial animus or religious animus or national origin. That's a classic felony. And then subsection C is assault and battery on a law enforcement officer, which is also a felony. So in my analogy, we might have where a court's reviewing that sort of a conviction, and the conviction order just says convicted of 18.257. And then there's an attached affidavit that says, I, officer such and such, was punched in the face repeatedly by the defendant. And then we're left to determine what was this appellant convicted of. We would have to look at the four corners of the conviction order and not to that extrinsic evidence. I don't think it's as clear as opposing counsel would represent to the court.
Well, is the evidence extrinsic if it came into evidence without objection?
Yes, because it's not the order. It's not a court order, regardless. Regardless of whether it was submitted and not objected to, it's still not a court order. And again, courts speak through their orders. They don't speak through summonses. And so for all those reasons, I would ask that you reverse this conviction.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel and